Hello, you have reached Litcracker's Animal House. How can I help you today?
Okay, I'm just...
Deep breaths. What is wrong? This is the Animal House. There's no emergency.
No, there is an emergency. I ordered a hippopotamus for my son's birthday, and that is not what I got. I got a pig dressed as a hippo. This is false advertising. I'm going to call my lawyer.
Whoa. Okay. All right. Pulling the stops. I'm going to ignore the lawyer comment just for the moment because
Sir, you do not understand.
I am not a sir. Anyway.
You do not understand. This day was supposed to be perfect. How can I have a perfect birthday for little Timmy if I don't have the hippo that he asked for?
We gave you the hippo that is exactly the hippo that you asked for, actually. We gave you the premium Super Saver hippo. We have a hippo, but you went for the Super Saver hippo. If you look at the catalog that we sent in the mail, you notice right there, the hippo's in quotations. And behind that's a little asterisk that said, this is just a pig.
I'll see you in court.
I'm feeling it. Let's do it. Moose crossings, red hot dogs, missing persons in salty bogs. Up to camp with Stephen King, river curses, Wesley sings. Homegrown horror!
Hello! And welcome to Homegrown Horror, Maine Spooky Podcast about Maine spooky things.
We have murders, true crime, cryptids, and today is another day where we are going to do history. I'm on the history train. Choo-choo!
Oh, is this old-timey? Would you say it's old-timey-ish?
This is 100% old-timey.
Oh, we love an old-timey episode!
Professor B is a co-host!
And I am Student Jackson.
Oh, you've upgraded from janitor to student.
Yeah. Amazing. Is that an upgrade?
Did I say upgrade? I meant downgrade.
Well, I'm in custodial school. I'm getting my master's in Windex.
Got it. I understand now.
There you go.
Ah, yes. It is.
It's a beautiful day.
It is so gorgeous.
A wonderful day to record a podcast inside.
Well, I spent the morning. I was out and about. I went to Kettle Cove with my mom and my beautiful wife, and we had a great time. It was very hot. I should have worn a bathing suit because I would have hopped in the water. And then I came home and I put together my sewing corner. And I'm quite chuffed. I'm very happy with all the work I did today.
I played Banner Saga and got new tires. That was my
tires.
We love tires. Yay. It was really funny because I went to Wally World for my tires. And the guy was like so frazzled. But he was nice.
Yeah.
But it's like I was paying through everything. I was like, oh, I had to pay for like, you know, them to actually put the tires on and all that. And they're like, oh, we could just give you the regular price. And like they had the warranty price. He's like, you don't need that. And I'm like, I don't need the warranty. He's like, and then he said, the house always wins. And I'm like, I like an honest guy.
Jeez. Okay.
Yeah. No, it's like, yeah, it's a waste of money. The warranty is always a waste of money. Don't fucking get it. Never. Yeah. It's never happened. It's not needed. And they always try to find an excuse to like weasel their way out of it anyway.
I'm trying to reorganize because I had to delete I usually use my iPad to read my notes from. I had to delete everything on my iPad, all the other apps, because I'm playing Honkai Star Rail. And it is big.
It's a big boy.
It is a big boy.
How big of a boy?
Well, it takes up all of the space on my iPad.
Yeah.
Do you want to know how many megabytes that is?
I want to see how many megabytes this silly little game is.
It is a silly little game, but boy, do I love it. Honkai Star Rail. So please keep in mind, my iPad has 64 gigabytes, and I have used 59.8, with Honkai Star Rail being 11.59 gigabytes.
It's surprising. So, okay. Okay.
I do have two other games on here. One is 7.19 gigabytes and the other one is 2.87. But so Honkai is the biggest.
So the other ones are Doodle Jump and Temple Run?
No, one is Ensemble Stars Music and the other is Phoenix Legend of the Court. Because I have a thing for Chinese dramas.
Oh boy, love it. Well, so this isn't about iPads, though.
Nope, we are back to old school. I'm doing my notes on my computer. Today, of all days, which I have been planning to do this for quite some time, and we ended up having the interview with Jeff, and then right after that, I didn't really have a lot of time to do notes, so I did Massacre Pond. So this one, I'm really happy that I took the time to wait to do this, but I had pulled like all my resources, which I have one single resource for this, which is the Portland Press Herald Special Project, The Night Portland Burned. And the two main articles that I pulled for were, this is a big website, right, that Portland Press Herald put together about the fire of 1866 in Portland, Maine. And the two articles that I mainly pulled from were The Night Portland Burned by Randy Billings and The Man Who Shouted Fire by Kelly Bouchard. I'm going to say this out loud. This is pretty, like, out loud. I'm going to say this up front. There is so much information on this website. If you are interested in this topic, dig deeper. There's so much shit on this website. This is very high level, but there's so much stuff. They go into more stories about survivors, what happened afterwards, the rebuilding of Portland. If you are at all like me, interested in history, do more research on this. It is fucking fascinating. It is not the first fire that Portland had, and I feel kind of bad that I just, boop, skipped over it, because during the Old Orchard fires episode, I did all the fires that I could find, but this one is particularly interesting, so that's what we're rolling with.
This is going to be fun, though. I mean, this was this warrants enough for a special website. This is taking up precious server space.
Jackson, buckle up.
I'm buckled, man. I've been buckled this whole time.
All right. The year is 1866. It's been a whole year since the boys of Maine returned from battle, and folks were finally beginning to feel as though the wounds from the Civil War were finally healed.
Racism was over.
Fun fact, over 73,000 Mainers enlisted to fight in the war, making Maine the state with the highest enlistment to population ratio in the Union.
Whoa, these boys got some conviction.
They do. And I mean, I don't know if you know what a role Maine played in the Civil War with Joshua Chamberlain, with the company, the 36 of Maine, I think it's called.
Yep.
Yep.
Hello. Editing Brittany here with a corrections corner. It is the 20th Infantry of Maine. It is the 20th of Maine. I do not know where my head was at, but it was not in the right place. So, corrections corner adjourned.
Basically,
if it wasn't for the 36th of Maine, Joshua Chamberlain might not have won the Civil War.
I think it's because here's the thing. I love the ballad of the 30s. I think it's the 36 of Maine by Ghost of Paul Revere. And it's so good. It's the Maine State ballad.
Yeah, it's a good one.
It's so integral. It's integral. So our scene is our very own Portland, which, as Randy Billings notes, was, quote, a hub for trade and immigration. It was a full day closer to Europe by sea than any other U.S. port. Its harbor rarely froze, and it had railroad connections, which was the Grand Trunk Railroad.
Not the Grand Funk Railroad.
To Boston and Montreal. Much like today, people were drawn to its economic opportunities and vitality, unquote.
Wow.
Jackson. I want you to picture this.
Okay.
Open up your little, like, imagination box.
Hold on. Let me blow the dust off this. All right, it's open.
The excitement in the air is palpable as the festivities for Independence Day celebration are underway. Many residents attend picnics with their families and friends. A parade is scheduled later in the afternoon on the Western Prom. There's a circus in town touting their grand star, a hippopotamus, along with four dancing elephants.
What a scene!
If you can find the time, you can head over to the baseball field to see the Portland Eons play against the Lowell Nine, or bet on a horse race or two.
I got a question.
Yeah.
Why is the hippopotamus the star? I feel like an elephant is more impressive than a hippo.
A hippo, I feel like...
Hippo...
The thing is like...
Is a hippo dancing?
I think most circuses have elephants. A hippo... That's out of this world.
Wow.
I've never seen
So we're dealing
hippo.
With a jaded audience. Oh, everyone's seen an elephant. A hippo!
That's interesting.
Look at this giant gray potato.
I will say, fun fact, apparently the hippo was just a big pig dressed as a hippo.
What, at the parade?
No, at the circus. So this is at the circus.
Oh, okay.
So they just had a... It was less of a circus and more of like a sideshow. And so someone was like, I'm just going to dress this hippo, this pig up as a hippo.
Okay, cool.
All
love
right.
it.
To cap off this magnificent day, fireworks were meticulously prepared to spark awe in onlookers. It was going to be the largest display in the state's history, in fact. And while there are still lingering effects from Neil Dow's prohibition efforts, it isn't hard to get your hands on some liquid courage, if you know what I mean. Everyone's doing the drinky-drinky. Yes, revelers were reveling, the celebrators were celebrating, and everything was set to make this 4th of July one to remember.
It's going to be a real banger.
But this glorious, perfect specimen of American independence was to be cut devastatingly short.
Uh-oh.
William Wilberforce Ruby, a 32-year-old local merchant and member of one of the most prominent black families in Portland, was enjoying the fine afternoon when he noticed something suspicious around one of the boatyards on Commercial Street. It was smoke.
Uh-oh.
Unfortunately, or as the story goes, two boys were playing with firecrackers when one threw a lit cracker, which is Jackson's new drag name, into a pile of wood shavings, igniting a small fire. I'll give that a minute.
Yeah, okay. Thank you for that. Lit cracker. I don't know if I like this name.
When I was typing it, I'm like, Jackson's new name is Lit Cracker.
Be on the lookout for the next skit featuring
Lit Cracker. This small fire would soon spiral out of anyone's control.
You know, have you ever played with firecrackers?
No.
I played with firecrackers when I was a kid.
I played with Morning Glories.
Morning Glories, what are those?
Remember the ones that I was using at camp?
Oh, yeah,
that's
those guys.
That's a Morning
guys.
Glory.
Okay, cool. Yeah, the firecrackers I remember playing with, and I remember you ever get those like little popping, like you throw them on the ground and just pop.
That's oh, the cherry bombs.
Yeah, I don't think those are cherry bombs.
I think there was a brand my cousins used to get called Cherry Bomb.
Gotcha.
They were like these. They were little, and they were like little red, like paper packets with like.
Kind of, yeah. It was like it was a tiny little pack, but you just throw them on the ground and they pop.
Yep.
I remember you could get them at like this little convenience store and just fuck around with them.
Amazing. Don't you love that?
Yeah, I love that. That you could just give a kid like small explosives.
And it's fine. Everything's fine. Ruby immediately began crying out, alerting everyone of the nearby flames. As many began to jump into action, many of the people out celebrating didn't seem concerned. Author John Neal noted that, quote, for the first half hour, indeed, so little concern was felt that very few among the 30-odd thousand inhabitants of our prosperous and beautiful city, one of the most beautiful and prosperous on the face of the earth, took trouble of ascertaining for themselves what the danger was or which way the wind blew, unquote. Mm. Yeah, they're just sort of like
whatever.
We're not which there are a no lot smoke. Of there are a lot of rich people that are out and about right now. There are plenty of poor people in Portland at this time, but the ennui is mostly from the rich folk.
Gotcha.
That
gotcha.
Was pretty clear. Even as firemen descended on Commercial Street, many continued on with their celebrations. Randy Billings accounted the fire, say, gonna do that again. In Randy Billings' account of the fire, that sounds better, he noted that perhaps the complacency stemmed from ignorance about the gravity of the situation. There were two other small fires that had been extinguished so easily earlier that morning. What was one more?
Yeah, exactly.
More firecrackers, actually.
Yeah, easy.
Supposedly.
Just put it out. Yeah, just put it out, just idiot. Put it out.
What are you doing? As luck would have it, or maybe not, the wind was blowing just the right way that the small fire that the two young boys had started became a roaring inferno. By the time firefighters had made it to the scene, a 2.5-story building was already engulfed by the flames.
People didn't see this. This is on Commercial Street, and that's pretty prominent as far as like being visible and where people, I would assume, would be gathered already. So they're just ignoring that, you know, burning building.
Yeah, we're just going to... don't care.
NBD.
Really. Commercial Street also housed a myriad of important businesses, so it was only a matter of time before really serious damage was about to be done to the city. Specifically, the Portland Sugar House.
So
the Portland Sugar House, which it dealt in refining sugar and molasses from sugarcane that was imported from the West Indies. We've talked a little bit about that in the Portland Rum Riot episode about how the rum trade is kind of linked to slavery. Anyway, this operation was owned by John Bundy Brown.
John, how's the sugar business?
How's the sugar business, John? It was worth a paltry $250,000, which would be $6 million today.
Oh, it's sarcastic, paltry.
As we all know, fire does not discriminate.
No, it hates everyone equally.
Brown's son, John Marshall, was a former officer in the Civil War. He joined the fray once he was alerted that their 8-story building was also engulfed in the blaze. But even the combined efforts of the firefighters and volunteers could not fight the twist of fate that nature would deal them. Billings writes, quote, "Firemen relied on reservoirs, wells, and cisterns, which were quickly pumped dry by the inefficient coal-fired steam engines.
The tide was
out, so drawing water from Four River was impossible.
Oh, shit.
Several fire hoses broke, further hindering efforts to stop the impending tragedy."
Okay, this is actually fascinating in the lengths and resources available to a city in planning for a disaster like this. So we've lost a bunch of hoses, the tide's out, we can't use the river, and like we've dried up all the wells. That's pretty bad. That's very impressive that it's kind of like, okay, we have no contingency left. We're fucked.
The quote continues, "As the sugar supply burned, an ominous black cloud pushed by the strong southwesterly wind crawled over the city. A harbinger of the destruction to come."
Great.
Realizing that the building would be lost, Brown focused his efforts on rescuing important business papers, cash, and other valuables in the office. For 5 hours, the 28-year-old Prince of Portland fought the flames shoulder to shoulder with volunteer firefighters, unquote.
Oh, John's also called the Prince of Portland?
He is called the Prince of Portland because his family has... So they also own the Falmouth Inn. They own a fuck ton of businesses, Jackson. Like, they own so much.
Oh, no.
We'll get there.
Do they all burn?
We'll get there.
Oh, no.
The Sugar House was first of many losses that became... The Sugar House was first of many losses as the fire became a conflagration, which is a fancy term for a multi-structure fire. So thanks, Portland Press Herald, for being my dictionary. Each time those fighting...
I'm a conflagration.
Are you?
Yeah.
Oof. You're a multi-flame fire. Yeah. A multi-flame, multi-structure fire. Each time those fighting the fire thought that they'd seen the worst, the fire became even more destructive. Everything burned. The new fireproof city hall across on Congress Street.
Wait, it was called fireproof?
No, they were like, this is a fireproof building.
Okay. Okay.
It was not.
Okay.
The densely packed neighborhoods on York, Market, and India Streets up through Bayside and Munjoy Hill. Charles Day Toy Store, where a large stock of fireworks ignited, leading to more chaos. With the western edge of Monument Square only being licked by flames before firefighters were able to control the blaze over there. Everything else was just a pfft. So people and livestock were running down the streets, wildly attempting to escape. They littered the roads with possessions while they are fleeing their homes. Children, the elderly, and the sick were carried to safety, including...
Save the hippo!
This part's really fascinating. So there was a 91-year-old woman named Hannah Thurlow who was rescued from the blaze. She also survived the Portland fire of 1775 when she was an infant.
So she was like, ah, shit, here we go again.
No, not again. A lot of my quotes come from Billings, Randy Billings, so just like assume everything from here on out. If I say it's a quote, it's from him. Quote, the streets were crowded with people with blackened faces and clothes scorched by burning embers, frantically calling for help, whether it was to find missing children or move their belongings. Church steeples collapsed. Slabs of stone and granite fell from the sky. Some hurried away from the fire with their possessions in wheelbarrows. Others carried couches on their backs. One man mistakenly cleaned out his neighbor's apartment instead of his own.
Another, how do you do that?
Another was observed driving a horse-drawn carriage full of furniture that had caught fire without him knowing.
Yeah, I swear this is my record player. Yep, totally my king-size bed.
And it's also on fire.
These are all of my precious oil paintings.
Local merchants removed as much of their inventory as possible. Some took their goods down to the wharves only to have their supplies stolen by opportunistic vagrants and thieves who snatched them up items as quickly as they were put down. And some carriagemen charged exorbitant fees to shuttle people and their belongings to safety, unquote.
Ah, what big bastards. What
yeah, Allegra bastards. Was like, that's fucking mean.
That's real mean.
That's mean.
Oh, and you want to save your stuff?
Yeah, it's just like, oh, you want to save your stuff? That's going to be a good $250, bub.
Right? Super shitty.
Super fucking shitty. Despite Market and Middle's brick structures, nothing could stop the fire. Quote, heat and flames infiltrated the barrier, melting the iron shutters covering the windows and gutting the buildings before devouring another densely populated neighborhood en route to Washington Avenue, unquote. So, brick buildings also burn. Fun fact. As they tried desperately, the crews working on the fire kept running out of water. They were never able to keep up with the destruction, and some buildings were actually intentionally torn down trying to deprive the flames of fuel, because remember how I said most of these poorer communities are just densely packed wood houses.
Yeah So once one goes up, they just kind of like cascade.
Yep, it's just so they're like, we're gonna tear all these homes down and really hope.
This chaos kind of reminds me of, you've seen Gangs of New York.
I don't remember Gangs of New York, but I have seen it.
So there's
an essay on it as extra credit for my U.S. history class.
There's a scene, this is a real thing, where during the one couple fires, it was like, I forget, I think they demonstrated one famous fire that happened, but there was another fire that had occurred. Where it was like two rival volunteer fire companies like interact with each other. Instead of, you know, fighting the fire, they fight each other. And then there's a certain point where it's kind of like, well, they also charge money for, you know, taking care of fires. And if someone doesn't have the money to help, they'll just take all their shit. And so like there's this one scene where the mayor is leading this volunteer fire crew. And they're like, all right, boys. Take it all! And they start going into some random person's house and that's like next to a burning building. And they're like, wait, no, my home's fine. My home's fine. And the people are just like grabbing shit. This kind of reminds me of that. Oh, just God. This like insane chaos that a fire creates.
Yeah, it is total chaos. Those that witnessed the fire called the roar of the blaze thunderous, like a hurricane or a tornado. Author William Willis said, quote, "The fire advanced with a roar like that of some infuriating monster, sending before it, as the fiery breath of its nostrils, a tempest of red-hot cinders, each one an incendiary and messenger of destruction."
Wow.
Unquote. And this monster was eating the city whole.
Damn, dude. Crazy.
By morning, the fire had long burned out, but the once prosperous city of Portland was laid to waste. And damn. This is a good time for me to bring up, there's a whole video that they have on YouTube, but I just want to show you.
The map of destruction that we get to see. Yeah.
I need it to load.
It'll load. Give it some patience.
This website is also ginormous, y'all.
Yeah. Many bits went into this.
So actually, I'm going to do this. Because in order to even watch, Allegra and I did watch the video that they have on here. In order to even watch it, we had to actually go onto YouTube. There it is. So this is the map. This is an excellent map. But so this is where it started down here. This is Commercial Street. And Cross Street is around here. Over here is Munjoy Hill. This is Congress Street.
I'm surprised the East End and West End seem to have done okay. And Back Bay seems to have held up strong during this. So this was really, like, all of the central downtown area was totally fucked.
One third of the city.
That's a very impressive.
And the thing that stopped it out here was part of Munjoy Hill was actually, like, agricultural fields.
Gotcha. So the fields, it was just like, okay, there's nothing left to catch.
But, like, yeah. This is huge. Like, that's a huge chunk of Portland just gone.
Yeah, you're talking about Commercial. You're talking about Congress. Yeah, big areas.
Just gone. So the Portland Transcript, which is one of the newspapers for the city at the time, wrote, quote, "Beautiful gardens were laid to waste, and the elegant homes became a scene of desolation. The whole area was honeycombed with cellars partially filled with fallen bricks, while above them rose the naked chimneys, a forest of brick in place of the once beautiful shade trees whose blackened trunks only remained," unquote. And they had requested, like, through this whole thing, so the fire burned, like, the fire was officially burnt out around 5 a.m., there wasn't much left. There wasn't a lot of detail in all this research that showed, like, when witnesses said, like, oh, the last flame went out, kind of. But we're talking about, like, 5 p.m. to 5 a.m. So in those 12 hours, volunteers had been requested from Lewiston, Biddeford, Hollowell, Augusta, Saco, Bath, Brunswick, Gardner, and even Boston.
Bring your Nalgenes!
To battle the blaze, but it was all for naught. According to the Portland
Press... Yeah, what are they going to do? Throw bodies onto the fire?
Talking, those are firefighters.
Yeah, I know they're firefighters, but the problem is the water.
Yes. You're right. Yeah, you can't fight fire without water.
All right, everybody, look at it burn.
You're right. Fair commentary from the peanut gallery. According to the Portland Press Herald, 10,000 people were made homeless, 1,500 buildings were destroyed, and there was over $200 million in damage, and about $17 million of that was the Brown family alone.
Damn, dude.
And again, that's in today's money. $17 million. And yes.
That's quite a hit to the bank account.
Because keep in mind, the sugar house was only worth $6 million.
I hope the
other $11 million is all of their other businesses.
I hope they got that insured.
I hope so. It seems that the death toll is unclear even today, but as the rubble was being surveyed, people and pets were extracted just in time, including Muff, a family cat, and there was a whole little, not a book, but like a little novella written about Muff. And then also there was a prisoner found by Police Deputy Marshal Sterling in the remains of City Hall. He just heard someone calling, like a little tiny voice coming from the rubble.
Hey, did anybody forget about me?
Apparently they
do. Do I still have to go to prison? Yep.
The city adopted many changes to their procedures for dealing with fires.
Of course they did.
And they worked very quickly to outfit their firehouses with state-of-the-art technology.
Lesson one, need more water.
Including a water line from Sebago Lake.
Yeah! Which, we fucking did it, boys!
Which would prevent their crews from running out of water in times of peril.
This is great. Yeah, I think this just goes to show that effective policy only happens after a major disaster.
But keep in mind, they had a major disaster in 1755.
But that was so long ago. It's not going to happen again. Back then, we had no firemen. Now we have like a bunch.
I did also want to point out that, so the guy who pointed out that it was a fire, William Wilberforce Ruby, which I think his name is so cool. He could have just assumed it was a tiny fire, but he immediately like jumped into action. He went on to serve on the city committee, as well as joining the fire department, the Mashagon Engine Company number 1 at 555 to 557 Congress Street in 1884.
Sick.
He would serve as foreman and assistant engineer during his tenure, which a lot of historians believe he was the first black man to ever do so. He would, according to Kelly Bouchard in the Portland Press Herald, quote, "It is also believed that Ruby had a hand in preventing the fire from taking the Abyssinian meeting house, which was founded by his father, a timber frame structure built in 1828 that still stands on Newberry Street at the foot of Munjoy Hill."
Oh, shit.
Ruby is credited with protecting the meeting house by covering the roof with water-soaked blankets, though the fire never got close to the building, unquote. So
I don't know how effective those blankets would be.
That's the thing, is like we can like, but he tried, but at the same time, the building didn't burn. So it's hard to say if it would have worked or not, but he was at least being like, what can we do?
Yeah, no, he was proactive.
Yes.
Trying his best, you know.
Yes. In the face of calamity, like the symbol that they adopted during that fire in 1775 or is it 1755? Well, in that other fire, they had adopted the symbol of the phoenix as the city symbol. And like the phoenix, they rose from the ashes because in just 2 years, much of the ruins were restored to fully functional homes and businesses.
Yep, they opened up a West Elm and shit.
The folks of Portland pressed on, flourishing into the city we love today. And another fun fact, in 1832, the city had adopted the motto, "Resurgam, I shall rise again."
I've been seeing that around, and I didn't know what that was.
It means "I shall rise again." It is the city motto, and it is fitting, but maybe it was tempting fate a little too much.
Yeah, I think that we probably shouldn't throw that around. We should knock on some wood when we do that.
That is the story of the 1866 fire, the Great Fire of Portland, Maine.
Truly interesting.
Again, one of the other things I was going to go into, but I kind of like lost steam about
just like this,
like as I was going, because there's so much stuff on this website that the Portland Press Herald put together, including all of the important, prominent Mainers that were affected by the fire, including my boy, Henry Wadsworth Longfellow. And he's my boy because my wife is named after one of his poems.
There we go. Well, what a fucking treat, man. And I love
his house is amazing. Like, if you've never been to I don't think you've ever been, we should go. The Longfellow house is really cool. And I always wanted to cover the death of Longfellow's wife because it is so heartbreaking.
Yeah, she probably turned into a ghost, so I think it's in our territory.
But she died in their Massachusetts home, not in the home in Portland.
Well, what are the ghost rules? Do we find any ghost sightings of her? Did anybody have I think it was her. Yeah, sure, we'll take it.
Fun fact, what happened with her is she was putting, because the Victorians, they're obsessed with hair. So what they would do is they would like cut their children's hair and then like frame it or put it in a locket. So she's like tying up her child's hair and it catches fire. and she catches fire.
Oh, boy.
And so the whole, like, the mythos is he carries her out onto the street. It's a winter night. Snow is falling. And she goes comatose in his arms, only to die a few days later, to succumbing from her injuries.
So sad.
I always wanted to cover it, like, as a full thing on the pod. But, again, it takes place in Massachusetts.
Can't do it. Sorry. Out of our jurisdiction.
But he's one of my favorite.
Unless, like, we change the rules. Which, who knows?
Who knows? Someday. There's still so many main things to cover, though.
Yeah, exactly.
But, so, yep. It burned, baby, burned!
What happened to the hippo?
Actually, there is a quote. Do you want me to go find that quote about the hippo pig?
I want to know about the hippo pig!
Uno momento, por favor.
Just, key search hippo.
I remember. I remember which article it was in. Here's a newspaper clipping, first and foremost.
That's a drawing of the hippo.
That is a drawing of the hippo.
I like how they're like, we'll dress up this pig like a hippo.
Okay, so this is, again, this is from...
What were the elephants? Just some Labradors?
Again, this is William Wallace once more, and from the Randy Billings article. In Cross Street, we saw a huge hog almost as big as the hippopotamus exhibited at... Oh, maybe it was a hippopotamus, and I just misunderstood. Almost as big as the hippopotamus exhibited at the circus, lying panting against the side of a building where it had apparently fallen through fear and exhaustion, unquote. Maybe I misunderstood. Maybe there really was a hippo.
So there was a circus and they had a hippo?
Yes.
And then there was a pig dressed like a hippo?
Let's say that, yes.
Okay.
They said the pig, a pig as big as a hippo. This is confusing. Anyway, hippo. Are you okay?
Hippo pig, are you okay?
Hippo pig, are you okay? Maybe I'm just an idiot and can't read, which is super possible. I'm almost 30. I have reading comprehension.
Barely literate. Mm-hmm. Oh, B, this was such a fun one. I'm glad not many people seem to have died, even though a lot of people lost their homes.
I bet a lot of people did die, but I don't know if people were just sort of like, we just lost them in the blaze, don't know where they went, maybe they're alive somewhere, I don't know. Because even in, like, the by the numbers section, the Portland Press Herald did not say, like, X amount of people died. Were they just really bad at keeping death tolls back then? Probably they seemed to be really more interested in being like, how much money did we lose? Oh no, not the sugar house. Oh no, I mean
that's pretty bad for that one family losing $17 million.
At the same time,
$200 million,
they were one of the richest families in Portland, and it seems like they got by just fine.
Yeah, they were probably okay.
They did fine.
Those poor millionaires.
Yeah.
Somebody think about
those
them.
Poor millionaires.
But yeah.
Well, that's the thing is, I think it's also really, I want to point out, because, like, I did include the quote about, like, the beautiful homes and gardens are honeycombed and, like, ashen and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, what about all the people who the only thing they had was a shack and it's gone? I bet the rich people in Portland were like, oh, I'm so glad that those unsightly shacks are gone. We can rebuild better.
That's kind of what happened in Portland, Oregon. Famously also had some massive fires that basically wiped out, well, some fires, some intentional demolition by the city basically to get rid of the poor people in the city.
Boo.
Yeah. And it used to be a huge Polish community. There's one church that's standing that mm-hmm. is original to that community that's still a Polish church. But they really didn't like Polish people for some reason. I guess they never tried a pierogi.
Unfortunate.
Yeah.
I do also think, because up until this point, I don't think, I know. So up until that point, when this fire occurred, that was the worst urban fire in the country's history.
Damn. So this was probably hitting the news cycles for weeks.
Probably.
Nice. Well.
And yeah, Portland the port was very busy because, again, it never froze and it was much closer to the UK
yeah.
than any other port. So it was so much easier because it had railroad access. It was a hub because people were like, why am I going to go to Boston and add a whole nother day to my journey? I want to get off this fucking boat.
Right. And it's like, then you go to New York and you have to go through Ellis Island and that's a whole shit show. Mm-hmm. It's like, I go to an island, then get back on a boat to go to the mainland. This is a lot of horse shit. Tell me to change my last name.
Just go into Portland.
Yeah.
I actually knew, I don't, they didn't go through Ellis Island, but I knew someone in high school who, her name was Anya.
Uh-huh.
And they were like, your name is Anna now.
Yes. My family did this, got the same shit on the Finnish side. Yeah.
But like, this was a girl I went to school with.
That's fucking crazy.
Like, it was in, she came to, like, I don't know when she came, but like in 2020, like in 2020, in 2009, when we were in school together, like, the teachers would be like, Anna? And she's like, my name is Anya. And I'm like, what the fuck? Why would they do that to her?
It is kind of weird. You're Anna now. Why?
Why? Because
Anya isn't hard.
Anya is not hard. I fucking grew up watching Anastasia, and that was her name, was like her.
Fucking wild. Fucking wild that, like, into 2000, you know, we got, like, some agents out there, like, this name's too foreign. We gotta change it.
And Anya isn't even that fucking bad.
No, it isn't. That's the thing. That's really funny to me.
It's so stupid.
Well, B, we've talked about some big fires. Now to talk about someone who's equally as big. It's time for our next mainism.
Hey, hey, it's a mainism.
Boging.
Yeah, so this is actually something that we had encountered. I had encountered for the first time. You have been familiar with this individual for some time. But we're going to be talking a little bit about Big Al. Mm-hmm. Not to be confused with Big Al's toy barn, though potentially inspired by, I have a feeling.
I don't want to go as far as to say that.
Well, I mean, looking at the old original Big Al structure and then Big Al toy barn, they're kind of similar looking, except one's mostly sold fireworks. I'll let y'all figure that one out. But yeah, Big Al is kind of a main celebrity, sort of a big business owner, basically.
So now there's the fireworks outlet, but it used to be more than that.
It was a huge department. It wasn't even a department store, but it had everything. It's a tchotchke shop. It had a little bit of everything. So you had your like kitschy tourist shit. You had your fireworks. You had your a lot of candy. It was a big candy store.
The official name is Big Al's Odd Lot Outlet Super Values.
That was the big one.
And when it went, so it went out of business after being...
And this was in Wiscasset.
Wiscasset, yes. Which is over also near where Red's Eats is.
So when we went up for our little maycation, our maycation.
I love that.
Yeah, I saw so many signs that were just featuring Big Al, Big Al's face. The Big Al character is iconic. I mean, he's not a character, he's a man. Mm-hmm. And his name's Al. And he's big. He's a big guy, portly. He's got suspenders.
Yeah, I'm looking at
him. A beanie hat, a very gristly beard, and for his photos, he's always like got this big old smile on his face. He's an iconic looking guy, you know. I feel like he would be on the submarine with Steve Ciso or whatever from Life Aquatic.
There he is.
Okay. Cool looking dude. Oh, yeah, he's wearing a fun shirt there.
Al
Cohn, that's his name.
And so in 2001, it closed after being in business for 30 years. And
good
one of
while.
The things that I remember, it's like one of those you had to be there moments, because Big Al's was like this liminal subspace.
Yeah.
Okay, like you go in and it's like, you know, are you familiar with the back rooms?
Yes.
Gives back rooms vibes.
Okay, gotcha.
Okay, and... People that I knew were going and just like filming, like sort of, because they were like, you know, we're sad to lose this liminal space, this like black hole in the middle of Portland, Maine. Not Portland, Maine, in the middle of Maine. I'm so tired. And I remember I went to school with a lot of people who now make horror films for Damnation Land. And so one of them like went up and was like filming like backroom style videos and putting it on social media and being like, so long, Big L. It was really, you had to be there. It was wonderful.
That's pretty cool. But yeah, closed down. He has a smaller space, not as huge.
Mostly just fireworks,
some candy, sodas. But as far as I could tell, as you've had an experience with this, a lot of Utes. What was it, 2001?
Not 2001, 2021. Did I say 2001?
Yeah.
2021 is when it closed.
Okay.
Not 2001. Wow. I'm stupid.
So anyway, yeah, big fucking space. A lot of memories that some Utes in this hemisphere had of Big Al's. Mm-hmm. Sad to see that I wasn't able to see it in its heyday.
No.
I would have loved to. Would have been cool. But now I guess I just gotta settle for the fireworks shop. Who knows what else he might do? He's up there. He's like 70, isn't he? He's pretty old.
You gotta settle for the fireworks shop, you know? Just don't fucking set off anything and start a fucking fire.
Well, luckily it's not in the middle of Portland, so.
You know. Still think it's so funny that it's just sort of like a toy store with a bunch of fireworks caught on fire.
Oh, they had the fireworks in the back. In the parking lot. That's where they were storing them. We hope you enjoyed today's episode.
We sure do. Thank you again for coming to Professor B's lecture on old-timey stories. And the thing is, like, I know, like, it's not true crime. But for me, fires are horrific. And just the fact that, like, the ones that I've covered is, like, there's just no stopping them.
Right.
And they can happen anytime, anywhere. And they're happening in Canada right now. And of course, you have experience with them on the West Coast.
Yep.
They are terrifying.
Yep.
So you know what? Fight me.
They're terrible. Better get used to it.
If you have newspaper clippings, photos, etc. of the Portland fire of 1866, give us a shout out at homegrownhorrorpod@gmail.com or hit us up on Instagram at homegrownhorrorpod. And as always, you can leave some stars and a review on Apple Podcasts, but we are just happy that you are here coming to class. Absences, they will mark your grade down. I don't want to give those. So if you can come to class, I would very much appreciate that. Thank you. It's in the syllabus.
Oh, boy. I've never read the syllabus. Never do it.
Well, I had a teacher who'd spend 2 whole days just going over the syllabus.
Teachers love syllabus. Syllabi.
She said she called them syllabub.
Syllabub?
She's like, pull out your syllabub.
No.
Thank you, everybody, and we hope to see you in the next one.
Bye. Bye.